control, and I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. We're going through what we're calling the 8 steps. We've consolidated 12 down to 8. And every now and then, like maybe once a year, maybe once every 18 months, we feel like it's good to go back and kind of go over the steps. There's nothing sacred about the steps. There's nothing magical about the steps, but they are our steps that we take, and they've really affirmed that they're healthy steps to take over and over and over everybody's life. They have in me, and so many people here would say, yes, they've really worked for me. They're not for everybody. They're not for everybody, but they've really helped most of us here. So we go back and look at them. And so we're on step 6, which I don't know what that would be in the 12 steps, but out of 8 steps, this is the 6th step. We listed the persons we've harmed and made amends, except when it might harm them or others. Do you know how that is in the 12 steps? The first thing is we made a list of those, blah, 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 and then we did make it. So we've taken those two, we made the list, and then we went and made amends. We've made that into one, consolidate that into one. So that's where we are. We listed the persons we've harmed and made amends, except when it might harm them or others. Everybody knows what amends is, right? You've hurt people. Hurt people hurt people. And at some point in time, in this healing process, we go back and we make amends. We say we're sorry. It doesn't necessarily restore the relationship. They may not want to speak to you. That's their prerogative. It's our job to clean up our side of the street. So we go back and we say we're sorry. But we need to talk about this just a little bit. Have you ever relapsed? If you're an addict, have you ever been in a relationship where you intend everything to be kind and good, and you wind up saying the most crass or hurting thing that you can imagine? Have you been, you know, I don't care what it is, whether it's an addiction or a relationship or anything, you're going along fine, and then all of a sudden you say or do the exact opposite thing that you wanted to do. And it just, you know, and then you have to figure out, okay, what am I going to do about this? I'm going to have to make amends for this some way. I'm going to have to do something about this. But what I want us to look at tonight, the first thing right out of the chutes, is if you're going to dance, and we've been using this analogy of the dance, if you're going to dance with God, which means you're going to have a relationship with Him, if you're going to dance with other people, which means you're going to come out of your cave and you're going to enter into community and you're going to start dancing with people. You may be a horrid dancer in real life, but let's just stick with the analogy at least. In this world, we're all good dancers. Let's just put it that way. So we're coming out and we're dancing with God and we're dancing with each other. But stumbling will always be part of the dance. Stumbling will always be part of the dance. The idea that we can ever become perfect dancers is the furthest thing from God's mind, and it needs to be the furthest thing from our mind. We will never become perfect dancers. We're always going to give ourselves occasion to have to make amends because we stumble. We're not as sure-footed as we would like to be, and we're not as twinkle-toed as we would like to be, you know? So we stumble, and in the process, we wind up hurting other people. Now, I know there are cases in your life and in my life where we actually meant to hurt somebody else. But wouldn't you say along with me that that was the rare, rare exception? That almost every time you hurt somebody else, you didn't mean to, but you did. And a lot of times the reason you hurt them was because you were in misery. When you're in misery, you don't dance real well. You flail about. And you wind up cold cocking somebody, or you wind up stomping on their foot, or you wind up tripping them and they fall on the floor and they get hurt. See, this analogy does work. So we want to dance, but stumbling is part of the dance. It's just part of the dance. So the one thing that we need to remind ourselves over and over about is when you stumble, do not go the route of shame. When I first got into recovery, I just assumed that was what I was supposed to do when I did something that hurt somebody else. It was a good thing to feel ashamed of myself. It's not a good thing to feel regret or to feel a tinge of guilt for what I did is one thing, but to feel ashamed of myself, I'm a bad dancer. I'm a bad person at heart. There is nothing positive or helpful in that. And so there's no shame in stumbling in our dance. There's no sense in going the self-hate route, the self-anger route, the I'm such a terrible person, I'll just be depressed route, the I'm going to go back into isolation route because if I come back out of my cave, I'll hurt somebody else. There's no future in that kind of thinking. So stumbling will always be part of a dance. Just swallow hard, take a big breath, look yourself in the mirror and say, I'm good with stumbling. I don't want to stumble. I don't set out to stumble. But I'm good with knowing that my dance will include some stumbling. I'm going to give myself room to stumble. God's looking for dance partners, not dance professionals. If you want some little silly cliche, I just pulled that one. You know, using this analogy, all kind of crazy cliches bounce around your head. And I thought, well, that one kind of works. God is not looking for dance professionals. He's looking for dance partners, people who are just willing to dance with him. He doesn't find joy in how well we dance as much as he finds joy in the fact that we want to dance at all. That's what brings him joy. Always when you're using this kind of analogy, what if it starts to slide off the plate, oops, I'm losing my eggs here, I start thinking of it this way, parent-child. As a parent, you don't expect your child to be a perfect dancer, but it sure does make you happy when they want to dance with you. So we're not looking for perfection here. We're looking for a willingness to dance. Hurting others doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It just means that you're a person. Doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you're a person. So if you come to this place and you say, I'm writing out my list. I'm going to go make amends for the harm that I've done to others. Don't add self-shame, self-hate, self-anger to this list. There's no future to that. Just say, this is part of being human. I hurt people. Didn't mean to, don't like it, but this gives grace a chance to do its thing. Let's go back and make amends to these people, see what happens. And so in this step, we say we listed the persons we've harmed and made amends. Do you know some of the people you've hurt in your past? I mean, I know some of the people I've hurt, and I've tried to go back and make things right. So that part of this is not strange to anybody here, right? You've kind of already done that. Have you ever stopped and thought what it would sound like to write a letter to yourself, a letter of amends to yourself? Just think about that. What if you sat down and wrote a letter to yourself apologizing for the ways you have hurt yourself, the ways you have disappointed yourself, the ways you have put yourself down, the ways you have hated yourself, the ways you've lied to yourself? This, as I was working on this, I thought, I wonder what that would look like. And I've not done it, but I want to. I want to see what that would look like to sit down and write a letter of amends to myself. Have you hurt yourself? I mean, I have, but I've never told myself I'm sorry. And I think I'm going to sit down and write a letter of amends to myself. I have no idea. Maybe we can get our heads together in a week or two and say, well, how did it go for you? Is really weird. Well, it's weird for me too. Just see where it goes. I don't know. Write amends to yourself. And then we might need to have an amends conversation with God. I don't know. And if we're honest, if we back away from all the little things that we've been taught about prayer in Sunday school, you know, you're supposed to bow your head, close your eyes, get on your knees, and say just the right word. Just take all the religiosity out of that and just have a conversation in your car or your truck when you're driving down the road with God. Just have a conversation with him and just have a heart-to-heart about, you know, God, I owe you an apology. Not I've been a dirty, rotten, terrible, awful sinner. Not that, but that time that I didn't trust you for this. So that time that I accused you of this and you really didn't have anything to do with it. Or you know how you would with a person. Just have that kind of conversation. I don't know how that would go. It might be some interesting conversation. Don't know. Be fun in a couple weeks to get together on that one too. See how that turned out. But when we want to talk about this analogy of a dance, that God is inviting us to dance with him and that we really want to come out of our caves and dance with each other in community. We want to get into this give and take. Remember what we called it? We said we invest in each other and then we're vulnerable as the other person invests in us. It's We have this elastic motion between us where we're giving and taking. Some of the most beautiful dance moves that we have, I think, come during these times of amends. This is an aside, but we're working on a workbook here at the church right now for families in medical distress. Families who are dealing with a terminally ill person, or a person who's just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, or maybe a special needs child has just been born into the family. They don't know how to handle that. Maybe somebody had a terrible accident, and now they're a quadriplegic, and how do we deal with that? Or we have somebody with some long-term recovery, 2 or 3 years recovery from an accident, a stroke, whatever. So we're writing this book it's a workbook for families in medical distress. And I got to thinking about, especially in the case of someone who is terminally ill, you know they're going to go. You can't heal them. They're going to die. And a lot of times with certain diseases, doctors are even able to tell you it's probably going to be in this time frame. Think about how beautiful some of those amends conversations could be. Not that you want to take advantage of a person's pain or anything like that, but you've been there. You know what I'm talking about. When you have family members, people you're really close to, and they're in severe trauma, maybe life-threatening trauma, there's certain walls that seem to crumble. There's certain past memories that seem to just like, those don't matter anymore. Yeah, I know the way you treated me when we were little and all, but somehow that doesn't matter anymore. And you get a chance to have these really honest conversations. And when I thought about this step here, I thought, wow, some of the most beautiful family times we could ever have would be making amends in that particular situation where somebody is either terminally ill and it's about their time, or somebody is just surviving, you know, just clinging like a kitten on a tree, trying to survive, and they're desperate, and they're really ready and wanting to be honest, and you can have that conversation. That's some of the most beautiful human dancing that can take place. I don't want to get cheesy with this, but any show that you watch on TV, not the poorly acted ones, but the ones that are really well written and well acted and have a good storyline, you know what that's like in the story when you've had these people, button heads, and then toward the end of the story, something happens and that breaks, and there's this reconciliation scene that they have. I cry like a baby. I just cry. What is that? What is that about reconciliation and making amends and saying you're sorry that just, I think all humans want that, don't we? There's something about that that we as humans say, yes, that is what I want in my life. I don't want the fisticuffs and the walls and you threaten me and I threaten you. We want this. We want clear air between us and the people we love. And so some of these amends conversations you have may be some of the most beautiful dances, and especially at the end of the dance, the most beautiful experiences you can ever have. But let's get real. Some people don't want to talk. You have to put this in. If you go to make amends to somebody, some people are not interested in amends. They're not interested in what you have to say. They do not want to hear your I am sorry. And so you just say it and say thank you for listening and you leave. You clean up your side of the street and give them space to process. I don't think, maybe I'm so super naive, but I don't think any conversation that is a truthful, authentic, loving amends conversation, as rough and tough and hard as they may appear, I don't think anyone is completely unaffected by that. I'm sorry. You can put up a big stone wall as you want, but I'll bet you a dime to a donut that night, in the middle of the night when you wake up to go to the bathroom, you're going to lay in bed and you're going to think about that conversation. I don't think there's such a thing as a heart of stone. I think there's some hearts with stone around them, but there's no such thing as a heart of stone. And I think that grace and forgiveness and amends has a power to penetrate that. And I'm going to believe that. If I'm wrong, so what? But I'm going to keep believing that, that grace can penetrate. And even though we might not have a good ending to that conversation, that doesn't mean the conversation is over. The grace conversation in the person's heart. So anyway, that's really all I want to say about this step tonight. But I wanted to say several other things about the steps in general. This just hit me when I was preparing this lesson this week, that there's a certain amount of magic in these steps that we take. They're not sacred. They're not magic as in magic, but there's a certain amount of magic. Maybe lowercase, not all caps, just lowercase magic. But you think about, concerning yourself, what happens when you walk through these steps, that you think through your stuff, and then you write your stuff, and then you talk your stuff. And you do it more than once. You do it several times. So that what is just causing this terrible chaos up here, it may still be there, but at least you kind of know what you're dealing with because you've written it out. There it is. I see it. And you've spoken it out, which means you're now a community project that people... So that's one thing that's really cool. Concerning other people, what recovery did to me or what this did for me was it pulled me out of my cave and got me with other people. I've never been in any situation where you can talk about your stuff like this. I mean, who does this? This is crazy. You get up and you tell people who you really are. Most of the world looks on this and says, what are you doing? You don't tell people that stuff. And we say, yeah, we do this on a weekly basis. But once you've come clean with your stuff, you cannot dwell in the cave because everybody that walks by your cave, at least on Pathway, knows who lives in the cave. I know you. You may be in your cave, but I already know your stuff. You might as well come out and play. So, you know, it pulls you out of your cave and into a safe community. And in terms of, at least with me, can't speak for everybody, but at least what happened with me and God was that I pretty much ditched God in terms of religion and got to know him in terms of relationship. So everything, this was a huge paradigm shift for me because I was a professional in religion. I was a pastor. You know, I was supposed to preach the company line and keep the, you know, all the rules and everything. That was religion. And now it's switched over to now I have this vibrant relationship with God and people. And so it's really switched that around, that when you say God to me now, I never think of religion. I never think of rules and regulations. I never think of that kind of thing. When you say God to me now, I think, oh, yeah, friend, father, buddy, whatever, you know. So, okay, that is what we're going to say about this step. You can pull the plug on the podcast. I want to talk about something else off the podcast. It's really secret.